something, something better than before. We expected something more. Do you really think you can just put it in a safe behind a painting, lock it up and leave? Do you really think you can just put it in a safe behind a painting, lock it up and leave?
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dr. Sarah Vakhshouri, who's an independent consultant based in Washington, D.C. She's a native of Iran and was an advisor to the director of the National Iranian Oil Company International, and also worked for the Petro Energy Information Network and the Iranian Ministry of Petroleum. She has worked in the private energy sector in Iran as a senior investment analyst for Pasargad Energy Development Company and as a senior consultant for Pasargad Bank and as a senior market analyst for the Oil Pension Fund Investment Company. She is the author of The Marketing and Sale of Iranian Export Crude Oil Since the Islamic Revolution and has an article at the Huffington Post, Closure of Straits of Hormuz, An Actual Threat or Diplomacy. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sarah Vakhshouri.
Thank you.
And let me ask, have you answer your question there. Is it an actual threat or diplomacy, the closure of the Straits of Hormuz?
Well, I believe it's a diplomacy, actually. Iran is defining its red lines for U.S. and its allies and basically letting them know that any blockage or embargo against Iranian oil completely would be the Iranian red line, as Iranian officials, they announced that if Iran could not sell its oil, any drop of oil from other countries could not pass from this strait.
So it seems that the United States is conducting a two-track policy. Following the National Defense Authorization Act, the president seemed to start a diplomatic track with meetings in Turkey at which the Speaker of the Iranian Parliament showed up. At the same time, they're ratcheting up the sanctions. The Secretary of Treasury is traveling around the world. He was in Japan trying to get the Japanese to stop buying Iranian oil. Can you give us a brief briefing on the success of Europe and the Americans in persuading Iranian customers to stop buying their oil?
Well, actually, that's a very important question, that is this coalition going to be successful against Iranian oil? And if this is going to be a success, for how long it can last and for how much of a cost? If we look at Iranian customers, we have European Union countries that for the first time they start the talk of sanction and putting Iran's oil under embargo. EU buys 18% of Iran's oil exports, which is around 450 to 500 thousand barrels of oil a day. And Iran is the fifth supplier of European Union. But we see that after a few weeks, some of the European countries, especially countries like Italy, Spain, and Greece, they are asking or requesting for a longer time to persuade in these sanctions against Iran. Italian, Spanish, and Greek refinery just extended their purchase contracts with Iranian National Oil Company by the end of 2012. The two refinery in Italy, Repsol in Spain, and Hellenic refinery in Greece. And simply because Italy imports 15% of its oil needs from Iran, Spain 10%, and Greece 14% of its oil. And Iran, with the economic crisis that they are facing at the current time, they are not ready to substitute the Iranian less pricey Iranian offers, which is of course much better than Saudis or alternative oils for that. Japan is another customer of Iran. As you mentioned, the U.S. and Japan meeting, Japan buys 14% of Iran's crude oil, which is 10% of Japan's need. And we see that the day after the Japanese finance minister announced that Japan is going to support U.S. sanctions and start reducing its purchase from Iran. Japanese prime minister, a day after that, came to media and said that this is the finance minister's view and Japan hasn't decided yet on this. And simply because, especially after last year's tsunami and earthquake, which the Fukushima power plant, especially in Japan, had damaged hugely, the demand of Japan for gas and oil increased, and also Japan is not in the economic situation to bear the higher prices than current prices. Also, if you look, Japan and Iran has a historical oil trade relation. More than 50 years ago, that Anglo-Iranian oil company put Iran under sanction due to its nationalization of oil. Idemitsu, the Japanese company, was the first company to break in the British sanction and come to Iranian Iranian water and loading the first cargo of diesel and gasoline. After that, we have other countries like India that they might not directly support the U.S. sanction or take a position against Iran, but they have a fear of further sanctions, like central bank sanctions. India is buying 12% of its oil needs, which is 350,000 to 450,000 barrels of a day, which cost them $12 billion a year. And the question is that if India could not transfer the money to Iran, how they're going to do the trade with Iran? They're currently talking to Russians and Turkeys to see if they could facilitate the money transfer to Iran. But otherwise, how India is going to buy Iranian oil? Is there any substantial trade between the two countries to lead this oil trade to a barter trade? China is a different story. China is the hugest refiner of oil, Iranian oil, and also is a main supplier of gasoline to Iran. China buys 22% of Iran's oil exports, which stand for 11% of its oil needs. China increased its oil imports from Iran to 29% last year, which was nearly $20 billion last year. And we see that Chinese refineries, Zhenrong, they exported $500 million of worth of gasoline from July 2010 to July 2011. So it's easy for this country to start a barter trade with Iran in case of any sanctions on Central Bank of Iran.
So Sarah, are you saying that the oil sanctions against buying the oil aren't working, but the banking sanctions are working? Is that what you're saying?
And the banking sanctions, well, so far are working, of course, but the oil sanctions on Iran, putting embargo on oil, it's very hard to imagine it's going to happen unless there is a universal sanctions under the UN umbrella against Iran, because oil market is so volatile. It's like a swimming pool. If we stop the flow of oil from somewhere, it's going to flow from other place. So my experience showed me that after the revolution, Iranians are good negotiators. They had the same difficulties when U.S. put Iran under oil embargo. When there was an Iran-Iraq war, Iranians are good negotiators, so they can always offer a better price. They can offer discounts over the higher prices, which makes the Iranian oil always interesting for countries, especially the countries that they are facing the economic crisis currently.
So again, I'm speaking with Dr. Sarah Vakhshuri, who is an independent consultant based in Washington, D.C. She was an advisor to the director of the National Iranian Oil Company International and also worked for Petro Energy Information Network and the Iranian Ministry of Petroleum. So are you saying, Sarah, that during the Iran-Iraq war, the Iranians, one, were skilled negotiators at discounting their oil, but they also know how to get around an embargo? Is that what you're suggesting?
That's true, Ian. Iranian on the hard time, they can easily attract their customers by offering lower premium in compared to other same quality of crude oil, which is like Saudi crude oil or Dubai or Oman. So by offering lower premiums, they can always find or attract their customers and keep their customers. Regarding the other sanctions, like financial or banking sanctions against Iran, Iran can maintain a barter trade and barter relation with its customers, especially customers like China, that Iran has lots of commercial and economic relation with them annually. So they can easily, Iran can import goods or services from these countries and in return for the cost of the oil that it's selling to these countries.
Well, I understand that's already pretty much what's happening in Iran, isn't it? Almost everything in the consumer market for sale is made in China.
That's true. Also, China, as I mentioned earlier, is supplying gasoline to Iran and other industrial equipment and technology. So there are a lot, especially between China and Iran, for barter relations.
So when the Iranian authorities, the vice president of Iran warning back just after Christmas, if Iran oil is banned, not a single drop will pass through the Straits of Hormuz. Where is the red line, really? If you're telling us that Iran is skilled at circumventing sanctions, both in terms of oil exports and being able to pay for their oil through the central bank. What is it that they're really disturbed about?
Well, my understanding is that closure of Hormuz Strait is the last card for Iran. And simply because if the Strait of Hormuz is closed or there is any traffic jam there, Iran could not use this passage for doing any export or imports. Also, it's going to turn not only U.S. and its allies against Iran, but also countries like Russia or China that diplomatically trying to support Iran. But at the Iran tries to circumvent the sanctions and uses all different tactics and strategies to find its customers. But at the point that the sanctions and embargo against Iran reaches to a point that there is no single customer for Iran, or Iran cannot sell any drop of its oil, that's kind of an act of Iran consider that as an act of war, simply because the oil is the main source of income for Iran. In 2010, $70 billion was oil income for oil revenues of Iran, which stands for 50% of its national budget and 70% of the government revenue. So if you block the main source of income for Iran, and Iran could not sell any drop of oil through this strait, and if the Iranian customers are considering any alternative source of supply from Iran, Iran tries to warn them that under that circumstances will not let any, not only Iranian oil or the regular global supply, but also the alternative supplies of Iranian oil to pass from this Strait of Hormuz. Saudi Arabia is the main source of alternative supply for Iranian energy. So Iranian are trying to say that at the point that they cannot sell any single drop of oil at this point that Strait of Hormuz is closed, even the Saudi spare capacity could not substitute the Iranian oil.
And in terms of the tactics that Iran might employ to close the Hormuz Straits, you say there are two ways they can do it: through conventional means with speedboats, submarines, warships, mines, etc., and then the unconventional tactics, such as sinking three or four of its own empty tankers in Iranian territorial waters, which would cause a traffic jam. That seems relatively easy. But again, you go back to what you're telling us, and that is, I don't see any way that China would ever agree to an embargo. Even a UN embargo wouldn't happen because China has veto. So how real is all of these threats?
Well, I believe that threats are real, but how, I mean, how soon is going to affect, or if they're going to happen or not, it depends all on the further circumstances and what is going to happen. Basically, that's the last card that Iran can use, and if other countries push Iran to that level, that Iran cannot sell any of its oil and has no other choice, that's a threat that it's basically saying that it's going to implement it. But if it's going to happen sometime soon, or how likely it's going to happen, I give a very low probability for it's happening, because Iran can always find customers, and we are seeing that currently, although European Union were so keen to start implementing the sanctions against Iran's oil import, the countries inside the European Union asked for extension of the time by the end of 2012. So this shows that even the countries that they are pro-sanction and they are supporting the oil embargo against Iran, or blockage of oily Iranian oil, they are not ready to implement the sanctions themselves. So I believe that when Iran says that they can close the Strait of Hormuz, or they are going to do that, it can happen. But how likely it's going to happen, it very much depends on what is going to happen in future, which I believe that it's not so easy to completely block the Iranian oil flow. And that's doable, not so easy, because if we consider OPEC, selected countries from OPEC, mainly Saudi Arabia or OECD countries, to substitute Iranian oil, we will not have that spare capacity in the market in the time of any other sudden interruption in the market due to any political instability or any natural disaster. Simply imagining that any countries like Iraq or Libya, Algeria face a supply interruption, we won't have that spare capacity to control the market. Also, any shift of oil flow from any supplier is doable again, but not so easy, because the refinery operation and also the refined production trade need an adjustment, and that takes some time. So these are the difficulties that are facing for these are the difficulties and obstacles for putting oil embargo against Iran. Also, the main question is that for how long this coalition can last against Iran. If Iran could survive the partial oil embargo by implemented by certain countries or different countries, if Iran could still find customers or maintain by selling part of its oil output, for how long and how for how long you and its allies are successful to maintain this coalition. After some time, Iran can still be active, offering less price than the market, and start to absorbing new customers and attract the customers. And in the current global economic crisis, I'm not very optimistic that these sanctions are going to work.
Well, just in closing, Sarah Vakhshiri, the naval exercises that Iran is conducting are apparently going to go ahead in the end of the month or the beginning of February. However, a joint U.S.-Israeli exercise called Austere Challenge 12, the United States has canceled, has just announced that it's canceling that exercise, clearly signal that there may be some concern in the White House that things are getting too dangerous in that part of the world, or that perhaps there's some hope on the diplomatic track. What's your understanding of the nature of the Iranian regime? Obviously, since you left the Iranian Ministry of Petroleum, it's now headed up by a Revolutionary Guard Corps. person. And Hillary Clinton has suggested that Iran, since that disputed elections, is essentially being taken over by a military religious faction, the IRGC, the Basij, etc. And nobody much seems to think that there's anything left of the Green Movement. There, you know, Shirin Ebadi says that the embers are burning under the ashes, but it looks as if the hardline regime is in control of Iran. How long do you think this regime is going to last?
Well, that's a very hard question to predict about that, how long the regime is going to last. But speaking of Revolutionary Guard taking over Minister of Petroleum, actually, I think that at the certain times, like now that Iran is under extreme external pressure, is kind of a blessing for the Minister of Petroleum, at least because Revolutionary Guard has different channels and different tactics to sell Iranian crude oil or circumvent the sanctions. But on referring on Green Movement and domestic circumstances and political situation in Iran, my understanding is that the more pressure, international pressure Iran is facing, the harder it is getting for domestic political reform in Iran, simply because people now in Iran are more concerned about further sanctions and economic problem that is resulted by the current sanctions, like the high rate of dollars in Iran, or the unstable prices in Iranian market, also a panic of war that people are dealing daily. So I believe that the more external pressures on Iran is increasing and strengthening the role and the power of Revolutionary Guard in Iran.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Dr. Sara Vakhshouri.
Thank you so much.
Again, I've been speaking with Dr. Sara Vakhshouri, who is an independent consultant based in Washington, D.C. She's a native of Iran and was an advisor to the director of the National Iranian Oil Company International, and also worked for the Petro Energy Information Network at the Iranian Ministry of Petroleum. She also worked in the private energy sector in Iran as a senior investment analyst for Pasargad Energy Development Company, and as a senior consultant for Pasargad Bank, and as a senior market analyst for the Oil Pension Fund Investment Company. She is the author of The Marketing and Sale of Iranian Export Crude Oil Since the Islamic Revolution, and has an article at the Huffington Post, Closure of Hormuz Straits, An Actual Threat or Diplomacy. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with an investment banker who worked with Bain Capital, Mitt Romney's company.
Energy conservation, there may not be enough energy to go around by the time I'm a parent. I'm going to talk about how we can solve some of our problems through alternative energy sources. You can learn more about energy too. Call your county cooperative extension service for more information. Conserving energy is everyone's responsibility. Call 4-H to find out how you can do your part.